continuing discussion of Vishnu Sahasranam, name 755, Manya, which means respectable. So far in the talks I've given on this name, I've highlighted that there are two main ways in which the commentators have described how he, Vishnu, is Manya, respectable. One way is what we might consider the more obvious way, inasmuch as he is great, he is powerful, he is God. And another way is he's to be respected or for his love for his devotees. But actually, if you consider, why should we respect him for his love for his devotees? Well, we do in this, even in the material sphere, there is respect for someone who is altruistic, philanthropic, who goes out of their way to do good for others. The love of a mother for her child is considered something highly laudable. But then why Vishnu in particular? His love for us is all the more remarkable considering that he has so many children. How many? Uncountable. Oh, infinity. Infinity multiplied by infinity, an infinite number of times. How many living beings are there? Krishna loves everyone, and also he's got nothing to get from us. He's so far above us. So his love for us becomes all the more remarkable and respectable. So even if we say that we are highlighting his love for us as a reason to honor him, but the very fact that he is honorable in the ordinary, what should we say, the ordinary sense of the term, someone who's powerful, wealthy, so much above us, he's respectable for all these reasons which we generally consider are respectable. Just like, for instance, we may say, well, it's respectable to be good and nice. Yeah, but there are so many good and nice mothers who are respected for that, but they're not particularly respected for that. They are, for instance, if a woman is wealthy and politically powerful, she'll be respected for that. She might also be a loving mother, although generally if someone's politically powerful, they don't have so much time for their children. It's pretty much a full-time job being politically powerful. But the point I'm making here is that respect goes more to the qualities that make one powerful and outstanding. It's not outstanding to be a loving mother. It's a very common thing. And although, the children will respect that, and there'll be a general respect for it. It's more likely that one will be disrespected within a community for being a not very loving mother, for not treating the children well. It'll be more likely that one will be disrespected rather than one will be respected for being a loving mother, because it's expected that a mother will be loving. So where am I going with all of this? I'm making the point that the love that the Lord has for us is all the more remarkable considering how great he is. And we find that also if someone is very prominent in the world, but still they demonstrate altruistic qualities, or they have humility, that is appreciated. They're respected for their greatness, their power, their wealth, but it is very much appreciated when someone who is in a very high position also has a bit of a human face, because it's almost expected that someone who gets in a high position won't be very caring for others, won't be very normal, or not able to relate or to give consideration to their subordinates. So if the Queen of England interacts with others in a very human way, it's difficult for her to do so because she is the Queen of England. But in a way, if it's seen that despite her highly respected position, she's not proud of that, and she actually has some feelings for others, well, that would be very much appreciated. But the respect comes from her position, and the respect increases all the more for her human-like tendencies. So this is Krishna, the Supreme Loving Lord, who we're speaking about. He's loved all the more by his devotees. He's respected all the more for being so great and respectable, but still being so loving and kind. Another point I was making in the previous talks is that respect in the material sphere is generally mixed with some envy. There's appreciation and there's envy also. In the spiritual sphere, there's appreciation, but not envy. Where there's envy, there cannot be love. And then we get into another discussion, how someone may be appreciated for their good quality, they're very kind. Just like I often give the example of Mother Teresa of Calcutta, as she's called, who was widely appreciated for her good qualities of helping the poor. But apparently, at least according to Christopher Hitchens, however reliable that may be, she, in many ways, she wasn't such a nice woman after all. And she mistreated many people. Certainly, in the matter of animal killing, she may have been kind to a few humans, but she wasn't kind to the animals that she ate. So people may have some good quality and some bad quality. Someone may be lauded as, great person. He's done so much for the country. He's given a gold medal for fighting for the country. What does that mean? He killed so many people from another country. I mean, well, that's a great deed he did, but it's a tribalistic consciousness. He's great. He's respectable, because he killed so many of our enemies. But from the other side, they're also humans, and they're not very happy that someone has killed so many of them. So when we worship Vishnu, he is Suhridam Sarvabhutanam. He is not taking sides. He loves all living beings, and he does kill also. And he's respected for that. But he happens to be on the right side all the time. He's upholding that which is good. Whereas these tribalistic wars we have, however much we may want to decorate them in terms of democracy, human rights, and all this, all these escapades in Iraq and Afghanistan and all. It's all for political measures, and people are being killed, not for any actual good motive other than certain countries who are powerful want to keep their privileges and power. So it's not laudable at all, actually. The Queen of England may give a medal to her troops who have been fighting in Afghanistan, but ultimately what they're fighting for is not respectable. So the point I'm making here is that this respect for the Supreme Personality of Godhead, we can give some examples, the respect and love of this, that for which the Supreme Lord is to be respected, that for which he is to be loved, that we can give some examples, citing, for instance, the Queen of England or Mother Teresa or a loving mother. But these are only examples which give us some idea and help us to understand, because the Supreme Personality of Godhead is not a materialistic person. He's in another category altogether. The respect and the love that we have in this material world, it's always mixed with envy. I love my neighbor because he's one of us. Lord Jesus told the story of the Good Samaritan, because apparently people in that place and that time, they had a very bad opinion of people from Samaria, and probably people of Samaria at that time had a bad opinion of the people from Palestine. So to be a Samaritan means you are bad in the eyes of the Palestinians. And Lord Jesus told the story, well, it's fable, an imagined story maybe, of if a person from Samaria acts in a very good way, for instance, he comes across a person in the road who, I can't remember exactly, who's all beaten and bloodied, and the Samaritan who takes care of him and looks after him, is he bad? And the obvious answer is no. Is he? He's a Samaritan, he must be bad. But if he acts in a good way, he must be good. So Vishnu always acts in a good way. Everything he does is good. That is axiomatic. So in my last talk, I finished by beginning to discuss the topic of respect and love in the description of the Supreme Personality of Godhead in Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam, and Chaitanya Charitamrita, and other scriptures. I'll get back to that. Bhagavad Gita definitely speaks about love of God, but the emphasis is very much on surrendering to him, knowing him to be supreme. And of course, that supreme, understanding of his supremacy and that surrender to him, that is with love, but it's very much on the platform of respect. Krishna establishes himself as the Supreme Lord. In the Bhagavatam, respect is there for his opulences and his greatness, but the theme of love of God and his love for us is brought out more. And to properly understand, to fully understand, or to begin to fully understand, or to even fully understand the love of God, who can fully understand? That's maybe a wrong term. To be able to enter into the full vista of the whole phenomenon of love of God, then we have to come to Chaitanya Charitamrita and the description of how Chaitanya Mahaprabhu brought pure love of God to this world up to the level, this is not Chaitanya Charitamrita, it's Basu Ghosh, who sings Radhar Mahima Prema Rasa Shima Jagate Janatoke. It is Chaitanya Charitamrita, and it's almost like a commentary. There's the song of Basu Ghosh, very famous song, that who but Chaitanya Mahaprabhu could have brought to the world, introduced to the world, the topic of the glories of Srimati Radharani, which is the ultimate limit of pure love of Godhead. So, this is the topic of love of God, which Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is personifies. He is Radha, love of God, in overdrive, in the extreme, unimaginable, who comes to introduce us to that. So I gave the understanding that we have to go through first Gita. I gave the understanding, I spoke on the understanding, Gita, Bhagavatam, Chaitanya Charitamrita. Then we can look back and say, oh, now we see through Chaitanya Charitamrita, now we see this is what the message of Gita is. This is what the message of Bhagavatam is. Srila Prabhupada, on embarking on his monumental commentary on the Bhagavatam in English, first of all did an overview of a life sketch, as he calls it, of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, with the understanding that to enter into Bhagavatam as a Gaudiya, to get really into the essence of Bhagavatam, which is love of God, we have to go through the teachings of Sri Krishna Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. The Bhagavatam, in the beginning, gives us the idea of the glory of God, by which he is manya, he is respected. Remember this, I'm speaking all this on the as an elaboration on the name manya, the respectable one, the name of Vishnu. So Bhagavatam opens with that, and then just opens the door into a whole new area, unimagined area of pure love of Krishna. The first verse of the Bhagavatam concentrates on the glories of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The second verse of the Bhagavatam tells us the glories of the Bhagavatam. And the third verse, these are three introductory verses which really set the scene for the remaining 18,000 or so verses. The third verse of Bhagavatam introduces us to something new. Now we've been through all the Vedas. And having been through all the Vedas, and then we come to Bhagavatam, and we are told, Vedyam Vasavam Atravastu. This is the real message of the Vedas. And then we find in the beginning of the third verse, Nigamakalpa Tara Galitam Palam. This is the ripened fruit of the tree of Vedic knowledge. Shukamakad Amrita Drava Sangyutam. And it's become even more relishable, having been tasted by that parrot, Shuka. So now we're getting the idea. This is not just something to be known, Veda, something to be known, but it is something to be relished. So from the third verse of Bhagavatam, we get the idea of, we're just getting introduced to the idea of love of God. It's not explicitly mentioned, but the idea of this is, Bhagavatam is something to be enjoyed. It's to be sensually appreciated, not just with the brain. This is on the platform of aesthetics, not simply noetics. Sorry for the difficult words if English isn't your first language. So the Bhagavatam, it really introduces us to the Supreme Lord, who is the Supreme Loving Person. But the Bhagavatam begins with the opulence, a delineation of the opulence of the Supreme Lord. And it ends with that also. And in the middle, there's a lot of talk about, a lot of discussion about the greatness of the Supreme Lord. And then there's also a lot about his love. And it's not, it's all mixed. It's not like two categories. It's not Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde and two masks, one with a smiling face and one with a scowling face. It's the same Supreme Lord. Bhagavatam begins with delineation of the opulence of the Supreme Lord, very famous verse, which we've all been through many, 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 many times, but still it strikes us. And the first time I read this Bhagavatam, the first verse of Bhagavatam, the first time I read it, I wasn't familiar with Sanskrit at all. Now I'm a little bit familiar, but the English translation just knocked me over, not literally, but mentally and emotionally and spiritually, and still it has that effect. It's so spiritually powerful, and I say knocks us over, but actually it uplifts us. So let's read the first verse of Bhagavatam. Why is the Supreme Lord to be respected? Well, that's a bit of a silly question, isn't it? But he's the Supreme Lord and he should be respected. How is he the Supreme Lord? The Bhagavatam, in the very beginning, introduces us to this topic. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Janmadya Sayaton Vyad Itaratas Chartesh Vabhigneswarat Tene Brahma Hridaya Adi Kavye Mohyanti Yat Suryaha Tejo Vari Mridang Yata Vinimeyo Yatra Trisargo Mersha Dham No Svena Sadane Rastakuha Kam Satyang Parang Dhimahi. Srila Prabhupada's translation. O my Lord, Sri Krishna, son of Vasudev, O all-pervading personality of Godhead, I offer my respectful obeisances unto you. I meditate upon Lord Sri Krishna because he is the absolute truth and the primeval cause of all causes of the creation, sustenance, and destruction of the manifested universes. There's a lot in here. I'm just about between a quarter and a third. What would that be? That would be between a quarter and a third. That means about of the translation. So there's a lot there to the absolute truth, the primeval cause of all causes of the creation, sustenance, and destruction of the manifested universes. Whew, that's a lot to absorb. But there's much more being said here. I'll continue to read the translation given by Srila Prabhupada. He is directly and indirectly conscious of all manifestations, and he is independent because there is no other cause beyond him. It's very difficult to understand the first time you read it. Well, you have to go, and then you have to read Srila Prabhupada's purports and the rest of the Bhagavatam and discuss with devotees. But even the first time we read it, we can understand this is something very powerful and meaningful. Continuing to read the translation. It is he only who first imparted the Vedic knowledge unto the heart of Brahmaji, the original living being. By him, even the great sages and demigods are placed into illusion, as one is bewildered by the illusory representations of water seen in fire or land seen on water. Only because of him do the material universes, temporarily manifested by the reactions of the three modes of nature, appear factual, although they are unreal. I therefore meditate upon him, Lord Sri Krishna, who is eternally existent in the transcendental abode, which is forever free from the illusory representations of the material world. I meditate upon him, for he is the absolute truth. This is not light. Whatever you may think of it, it's not light. And it's like very heavy food. We may not be able to digest it. We may be able to digest it if we take it in small quantities and chew it very carefully. There's a lot there. It's heavy stuff. heavy and blissful. And on the platform of respect, establishing the opulence of the Supreme Lord. So that's the very first verse of Bhagavatam. The Bhagavatam begins like that, and then going through 18,000 verses or so, we have at the end of the Bhagavatam, in the first verse of the last chapter, I mean, the last chapter is very few, the last chapter in the 12th canto of Bhagavatam is about 12 verses, or some, I don't remember exactly. So the Bhagavatam ends like this: Yang Brahma Varunendra Rudra Maruta Stunvanti Divyaistavair. I'll read that again. Yang Brahma Varunendra Rudra Maruta Stunvanti Divyaistavair Vedai Sangha Pada Kramo Parnishadair Gayanti Yang Samagaha Dhyana vastita tadgatena manasa pashyanti yam yogino yas yantam navidu sura suragarna devaya tasmai namaha. Unto that personality whom Brahma, Varuna, Indra, Rudra, and the Maruts praise by chanting transcendental hymns and reciting the Vedas, with all their corollaries, padakramas, and Upanishads, to whom the chanters of the Samaveda always sing, whom the perfected yogis see within their minds after fixing themselves in trance and becoming fully absorbed in thoughts of him, and whose limit can never be found by any demigod or demon, unto that Supreme Personality of Godhead, I offer my humble obeisances. Gaurya Vaishnavas recite these verses also. We'll find them in Chaitanya Charitamrita also, along with much consideration of the opulence of the Supreme Lord. But for Gaurya Vaishnavas especially, discussion of the opulence of the Supreme Lord naturally develops into discussion of his loving nature. And that is very apparent in the discussion at the end of the Madhya Lila, several chapters at the end of the Madhya Lila of Chaitanya Charitamrita, in which Sri Krishna Chaitanya Mahaprabhu describes the opulence of Krishna to Sanatana Goswami, and then Chaitanya Mahaprabhu gets carried away in trance and just on a roller coaster. He's just graduates, you could say, from the opulence of the Supreme Lord in Vaikuntha to the opulence of Golok Vrindavan, and then on and on into the loving affairs of the Supreme Lord. So in Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's teachings, consideration of the opulence of the Supreme Lord, the majesty, the power, the Aishvarya Vicha, that is called, that automatically leads to Madhurya Vicha, consideration of the sweetness and loving nature of the Supreme Lord. He is to be respected for his opulence and for his loving nature. But the Gaurya Vaishnava Acharyas warn us that the Madhurya Vicha, consideration of his sweetness and his love, the sweetness and love of the Supreme Lord, as long as we do not attain the adhika, the proper eligibility to properly understand or enter into or be allowed to enter into that Madhurya Vicha, then Madhurya Vicha is open to everyone. In the Gaurya Vaishnava Sampradaya, from the very beginning, it's one of the defining factors, a major defining factor of the Gaurya Sampradaya. That, and we could say these are the two main, well, what are the defining factors? Then we get into another discussion. One is the Madhurya Vichar up to Radha Leela in Parakiya Bhav. Another is the emphasis on Nam Sankirtan. Another is the acceptance of Sri Krishna Chaitanya Mahaprabhu as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But anyway, the Gaudiya Vaishnava Acharyas, they warn us that as long as we are not fully qualified to relish that madhurya of the sweetness of the Supreme Lord on the platform of the eternally liberated souls, then our entrance or our consideration of the sweetness of the Lord must be tempered by consideration of his Aishwarya, his opulence, and our position, ontological position, as his servants, knowing ourselves to be subordinate to him. Because in the Madhurya Vichar, especially in Madhurya, it permeates all of Raja, all of Raja Ras. So in Raja, there is Dasya Bhav, Dasya Rati, there is Sakya Rati, there is Vatsalya Rati, and there is Shringarati or Madhurya Rati. But even in the Dasya Rati, the Madhurya, the sweetness is in Vrindavan, everything is permeated by sweetness, in which one, out of intense love for Krishna, doesn't think of him as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But that is only possible when we're so solidly fixed in our position of service to him that we can forget that we're servants. Difficult to understand, yeah. But as long as we don't fully understand and don't fully enter into it, then we must always remember he is, after all, God. Now, usually when I go through these names in Vishnu Sahasranama, I usually read the commentary of the Sri Vaishnava Acharyas first, beginning with that of Parashara Bhatta, and then come to others. But I didn't this time because I wanted to go through that point of respecting him for his opulence first. I thought it more apt in this case to go through that first and then come, although I've also intermixed discussion of his loving nature for which he is to be respected. So now, after quite some digression, I'll get into the Sri Vaishnava commentary or just some discussion of that. It's the Sri Vaishnava commentary first is by Sri Parashara Bhatta. And then other commentators also had their thoughts, their realizations, their revelations. And actually, this is typical of Parashara Bhatta. He's throughout his commentary, he always brings out the loving nature of the Supreme Lord, not in the same way as the Gauriyas, but very much emphasizes on that point. So that some of the ways he, Sri Parashara Bhatta, some of the ways he explains the name in Vishnu Sahasranam, they might seem at first, well, that's not exactly right, is it? The obvious meaning is something else. But he doesn't always take the obvious meaning. He sees what is the meaning as will be understood by loving devotees. What is the secret meaning? So say this, manya. Manya in relation to the Supreme Lord means, of course, he's respectable because he's great. Ah, but what's his greatness? Says Parashara Bhatta. Well, his greatness is his loving attitude toward his devotees. So this is the point Sri Parashara Bhatta makes in relation to the name manya. He is worthy of respect. Bhagavan is worthy of respect because of his special relationship with his devotees, permeated wholly with his affection for them. And he gives an example of Krishna in relation to Arjuna. There are dozens, maybe hundreds of examples of Krishna expressing his affection for Arjuna. Sri Parasha Bhatta quotes one of these from the Mahabharata, in which Krishna says, Natsarate sattvata kauravarnam krudhasya mucheta ranedya kaschit. In the battle today, Krishna says, this is during the battle of Kurukshetra, at the beginning of one day, Krishna says, no sattvata or kaurava. Sattvata means the army of Krishna, who is fighting on the side against Krishna. No sattvata or kaurava is going to escape death because the charioteer of Arjuna is angry. Charioteer of Arjuna means Krishna. Then another Sri Vaishnava commentator, Sri V.V. Ramanujan, quotes from Narmalava's Piriya Tiruvantadi, where the Narmalava says, addressing Bhagavan himself, you are constantly thinking of the good that you can do to your devotees. He is manya. He is to be worshipped. But only the devotees can, only the pure devotees can properly understand this. People who are desirous of monetary gain, artarti means those who are desirous of monetary gain, which is a category within artha, those who are distressed. They respect the Supreme Lord, but their respect, it cannot be on the level of those who are pure devotees. Now, the different commentators on Vishnu Sahasranam, naturally, they comment in accord with the teachings of their sampradaya. They all quote from Shastra, various Shastras, and the Sri Vaishnavas, they also quote from that which wouldn't be considered Shastra by others. Particularly, they quote from the Divya Prabandham, which is only is considered Shastra by the Sri Vaishnavas, not by followers of Shankara or by Madhva, although the followers may have some respect, but they don't consider it authoritative in the way that Sri Vaishnavas do. And that's true also. We have in our sampradaya the Chaitanya Charitamrita, which is, we accord to it the highest canonical status, which other sampradayas do not. So naturally, in commenting on Vishnu Sahasranam, the different commentators, they do so according to the Siddhanta, or the understanding, the vision, the school of philosophy, whereby their acharyas comment or explain the message, or the overarching message of Shastra. Now, understanding this, we will see that in the Dvaita, or the Madhva Sampradaya interpretation of this name, they bring in, well, let's read it. Maya Ramapalakshmi Jativarasho Anya Bhinna Iti Manya. Vishnu is different from Goddess Mahalakshmi, and therefore Vishnu is different from all jiva clusters. Hence he is called Manya. So in other words, they're making a point that he is respectable because he's far above everyone else, all the jivas and Lakshmi, because they count, the madhvas count Lakshmi as a jiva, above the other jivas, but a jiva nevertheless. She is very powerful, but she is less than Vishnu. Now, the Sri Vaishnavas, Sri means Lakshmi, they're very strong on the point that she is as good as, if not better, than Vishnu himself. She's as powerful. She's absolutely intrinsic to his existence. So we'll see that they'll disagree with this. And so will we, for that matter, because we specially ascribe that position to Radha in relation to Krishna, we Gauriyas. So one of the interpretations, Maya Ramopa Lakshmita Jiva Rasho Anya Bhinna Iti Manyaha. Vishnu is different from, difference is big, 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 big thing in the Madhva Siddhanta. So Vishnu is different from Goddess Mahalakshmi and then above all the jivas also, so he's respectable by all. Then another interpretation of this name, Manya, from the Madhva Sampradaya. Maya Ramaya Anya Cheshtaniya Yasya Iti Manyaha. Only Vishnu can make Lakshmi full of life and do what, only he can inspire her and empower her to do what she does. Therefore, he's called Manya. Which won't be accepted in all sampradayas. So we see that yeah, there may be different understandings which not everyone will accept. They'll only be accepted in certain sampradayas. Baladeva Vidyabhushan, in his commentary, states that he is called Manya. And here's something else which is interesting, because I'm using the numbering system of the Sri Vaishnava Sampradaya here, in which this is named 755 Manya. But in Baladev's commentary, Manya is 748, because different commentators split the Sanskrit in different ways and bring out different names. It's quite a whole universe. It's more than all the universes, Vishnu Sahasra number. Could be a subject of multiple studies. It is Vishnu Sahasra number. Actually, not so many. Should be more. So, Baladev Vidyabhushan, how does he describe that Vishnu is Manya? He is Manya, respectable, because he's invoking the pastime of Krishna. Baladev Vidyabhushan says, while serving as a doorkeeper and so on, he is revered by the Pandavas. He acts in a manner to serve the Pandavas, but at the same time, he's respected by them. Even though he takes a subordinate position to them out of his love for the Pandavas, he's still respected by them. Why? Why did he act in this way? I'm not going to tell you yet. Wait for the next name and see what Baladev says there. Now, one point that could be raised here is that Manya means the respectable God. But isn't there much that Krishna did which is not very respectable? We have descriptions of him passing stool and urine. Well, I shouldn't say it, but to bring out the point, anyone respectable in this world, they also pass stool and urine, even the Queen of England. Highly respected, she also passes stool and urine. even the prime minister of any country passes to is it respectable? Well, it's not something he's respected for. But you wouldn't expect the Supreme Lord to pass Stolnjurin. Well, you wouldn't expect, but he does. And it's described in Shastra. Okay, all right, all right. But what about his dancing with other people's wives, inducing the Pandavas who live for dharma to go against the principles of dharma in so many ways? Maybe we shouldn't. Yes, we should respect him. The great acharyas, they are aware of all of this, but nevertheless, they respect him and they give all evidence from Shastra as to why he should be respected in the highest degree. Understanding, janma karma chame divyam evangyo veti tatvataha tyaktva dehang punar janma naiti mameti sorjuna. Everything Krishna does, beginning from his birth, it's all transcendental. It's all on a divine platform. If we understand this properly, then we ourselves, by Krishna's grace, ascend to the divine platform. We go to Krishna, never to come to this material world again. Now, this may be a thorny point for many people who say, Krishna's not respectable. I'm better than him. I don't run off with other people's wives. I'm much more moral than Krishna is. I have spoken extensively on this topic of Krishna's immorality in one of my talks on Vishnu Sahasranam. Not one of them. I believe it was a whole series of talks. I don't exactly remember now because... Bahuni mevatita anijan mani tavacharjuna tanya hung sarva veda veda... See, I can't even remember the verse. But Krishna... Natvang veta parantapa. Yeah. Krishna tells Arjuna, I've taken many births, so have you. I remember them. You don't remember them because you're a jiva, and I can't even remember the verse. So I don't remember exactly which name I spoke on in this, in Vishnu Sahasranam, because previously we didn't add hashtags, and we didn't... I just give the name, just like I'd put the name Shippi Vishta or something like this, and without giving it an English title. So that's something which could be done and would be helpful with the app, which is made for devotees to navigate their way through my lectures. That would be useful if devotees want to go back and listen to the old talks on Vishnu Sahasranam, which don't have hashtags, they don't have titles, and suggest subjects for the hashtags and suggest titles, and that would be helpful. Then we could find out which series of talks. Say if we want to go back and find out, well, where do we discuss in detail about Krishna's supposed immorality? Oh, okay, just look it up in the app, got it. So if there are any volunteers who would like to do that, well, volunteer. One of my respected godbrothers, Abhiram Prabhu, who's listening to these Vishnu Sahasranam talks, I'm honored and humbled that such respected devotees should do so. He suggested to make these talks into books. Good idea, but it would require transcribing hundreds of lectures. That's the relatively easy part. And then to edit it all and make it smooth English. Huge, huge, huge job. Maybe someone at some point in time will do it. In the meantime, I'm plodding on trying to finish the book projects, which I've already undertaken. So a lot of important things to do, I feel. Speaking on the Supreme Lord, writing about aspects of the mission of the Supreme Lord in this world. A lot of work to do. Even to prepare these talks on Vishnu Sahasranam, it takes me quite some time to look in different shastras, look through the Veda base, meditate upon it for each name, and then different ideas come, what I should speak about and all this. So, request blessings of the devotees, and thank you to those of you who are kind of listening and appreciating. So that for now is the name Manya, the topic that for now is, I'm going to close it there and go on to the next name in the next talk in Vishnu Sahasranam. So this one name came to 3 lectures, and one name I spoke on came to almost 50 lectures. Some names I've spoken on 5 or maybe even 6 sometimes in one lecture. But it seems as I'm going on, I'm spending more and more time with each name. It's bliss. May the Supreme Personality of Godhead always be glorified. That is the perfection of life for us, to glorify Him. Vancha kalpatarubhyascha kripa sindubhyavacha patitanam pavanebhyo vaishnavebhyo namo namaha. Dante nidhaya trunakang padaya nipatya kritvacha kakushatameta raham ravimi hey sadhava sakala eva vihaya durat goranga chandra charane kurutanu raga parivada tu jano yatata tava nanu mokaro nabayang vicharya maha hari rasa madira madati mata bhuvi vilutama Tama Nirvishama. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.